One of my favorite ways to unwind is by playing a game on my phone while I relax on the couch. And June's Journey is my new favorite as it combines several of my favorite things: finding hidden items, decor and design, and solving a murder. In June's Journey, you dive into June's captivating quest to uncover a scandalous hidden family secret while discovering the truth behind the unexplained death of her sister. As you uncover clues, you also get to build your own island estate with expansive gardens and beautiful buildings. You get to collect scraps of information to fill your photo album and learn more about each character. You get to chat and play with or against other players by joining a detective club. You'll even get the chance to play in a detective league to put your skills to the test. So can you crack the case? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
This episode contains adult themes and is not appropriate for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, the world. This is They Will Kill, a true crime podcast. I'm Sadie Eck.
And I am Courtney Eck.
And it's Courtney's day to tell us a terrible story.
It is a terrible story. And y'all know I'm not the biggest fan of old-timey true crime.
No.
I definitely shy away from it. So you know if I choose an old-timey true crime story, it's pretty effed.
Ooh.
And this one is extremely effed. This is the diabolical case of Dr. Linda Hazard.
Ooh, tell me everything.
So 1910, Claire and Dorothea Williamson, Dorothea went by Dora, were sisters in their 30s, and they were the daughters of a very wealthy British officer. Both of their parents had passed when they were very young, as had their two sisters who died of scarlet fever. So it was just the two of them, and they were eager to connect with the family members they had left in the world. Their grandfather had left the family around $1 million when he passed.
Whoa. Wow.
Which was an enormous amount of money at the time.
Yeah, I bet it was.
And after their entire family died, the sisters had full control over the fortune and so used it to buy beautiful homes around the world, closets full of beautiful clothes, and they had seen most of the world by that time. So they took a ship to Quebec to see family who lived there, then crossed to the West Coast and stayed in British Columbia for a while. While there, they saw an advertisement for a book called Fasting for the Cure of Disease, written by Dr. Linda Burfield Hazard, and it immediately caught their attention.
Mm-hmm.
They were always on the lookout for ways to be as healthy as possible, and I'm sure losing their siblings to disease only enhanced their preoccupation with their health. Dora was known to complain of joint inflammation and was convinced her glands were swollen. And Claire thought that her, quote, uterus had dropped back on her spine and her ovaries were inflamed after someone had suggested that could be the cause of her issues. But then it would just go away. And they were maybe a little hypochondriacs.
Yeah, I can imagine the trauma of losing everybody you love.
Yeah, their father died when they were very young, like three. Mm-hmm. One and three, I think. And then their mom died when one of them I know was 14 and the sisters had died. One of them had died before Dora was born and then another one died soon after. They had both given up eating meat and wearing corsets after they were told those could be the root of their issues. And they spent a lot of time in various clinics and institutions over the years in search of miracle cures. And when I say institutions, I mean more like prestigious institutions, not mental institutions, but continued to fixate on their ailments, real or imagined. Quote, it was almost a hobby, a lifestyle, their great quest. Oh, and I forgot to mention, I got a lot of this information from the book Starvation Heights by Greg Olson. So shout out to Greggy for writing this fucked up story. So Claire wrote a letter to Dr. Hazard, who claimed to be the only licensed fasting specialist in the entire world. How convenient.
Uh-huh.
How convenient to be the only person to hold that license.
Yeah.
And where did you receive, what institution gave out one license to someone, to one person? And how did they choose that person? And how do they make any money?
Right. And did she make her own institution to get her own certification on her own
makeup? Methinks that might have been part of the process. Claire wrote, explaining that her sister Dora had been suffering greatly and they felt they could benefit from her wisdom. 5 days later, the book arrived at their hotel and they began learning about Dr. Hazard's claims that in order to allow impurities to travel out of your system, you must rest your digestive system, and this, quote, natural cleansing process would allow the body to become stronger.
Was her clinic right next to Dr. Kellogg's?
She was inspired by Dr. Kellogg. She wanted to make something more grand and more effective than Dr. Kellogg.
And he was a doctor, right? I'm not just
Yes, he
up.
Was. Yeah. He was also a eugenist and a fucking psychopath.
Who, yeah.
God, that guy creeps me out. He's like, you must eat cornflakes so that you don't have sexual desires.
Ugh, God.
He wanted to make the most bland food in the world. And then people were super into it.
That we all still love and eat. How crazy is that?
Yeah, that it really was just to dampen sexual desire. That's where cornflakes came from.
Put some frosting on them, bitches. Sign me up.
Fucking Dr. Kellogg is rolling over in his Nazi grave thinking about people putting sugar on his precious gruel crisps. That is so tantalizing. Everyone's getting erections as they eat their bowls of Frosted Flakes. You would not have it.
No.
Oh, my God. So the sisters were very intrigued by the idea, as they'd already been convinced that diet was a big part of their health issues, which is true. Yes, people's diets are major parts of health issues, but everything in moderation. And so when they learned that Dr. Hazard ran an Institute of Natural Therapeutics in Olalla, Washington, they became preoccupied with the idea of attending and receiving treatment.
Also, don't trust a doctor named Dr. Hazard.
Seriously, she's telling you already, giving
this
you a fucking clue.
Okay. Yeah.
With two Z's too, which is somehow worse.
Well, it's like buzzard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just nothing good is going to come out of two Z's in a row. That's your first clue.
Take it from us.
That's what I always say. The Institute was advertised as being in rural Washington. And if you've ever been to rural Washington, you know it's extremely beautiful. And the sisters loved the idea of getting fresh air while riding horses and eating food grown locally to help their bodies get the nutrients they needed to feel better. In December of 1910, Dr. Hazard wrote and said that the facility wasn't quite ready yet, but would be in the early part of the year, and that they should administer enemas on themselves and switch to a diet of vegetable broth with no bread, cornbread being the only exception. The sister was like, no bread at all. The other sister was like, none that tastes good anyway.
God. Nope.
They wrote to their loved ones to tell them they planned to do some more traveling in the new year, but were vague about where they were going because they knew they'd be skeptical that they were seeking another wacky cure to their health that most people insisted was just fine. The sisters also, quote, exhibited a childlike naivete and innocence that sometimes left them a target of manipulation by those with dubious intentions. And their loved ones constantly feared they were being taken advantage of because they had been plenty of times in the past.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, if you walked up to them at a bar and a man was talking to them, he was some sort of like financial swindler 9 times out of 10. In January of 1911, they received word that the facility still wasn't ready, but Dr. Hazard offered to treat them in an apartment in Seattle while they finished and then transferred them to Olalla once it was time, and they agreed. So in February of 1911, they traveled to Seattle, Washington, to meet the doctor for the first time and to start their path to wellness once and for all. Dr. Linda Hazard was 43 years old in 1911, had grown up in Minnesota with an American father and a Canadian English mother. She had first studied nursing, then had become an osteopath at a time when there were very few female doctors in the country, and that fact had impressed the sisters, especially Claire, who was the more naive of the two. According to the doctor, her methods had cured, quote, cancer, a toothache, psoriasis, heart trouble, tuberculosis, epilepsy, and insanity.
Wow, that's lucky. That's good list of things to cure.
And insanity. Mm-hmm. She believed that overeating, and particularly eating meat, were the root of most medical and moral issues in the world, and claimed that meat eaters were foolish, disgusting, and suicidal.
Which is not wrong.
As a lifelong vegetarian, I couldn't agree more. No, it turns out I'm vegetarian because I have sensory issues, not because I'm a morally superior person. I just can't handle the texture or the taste. When she met the sisters for the first time, she didn't do any type of intake or inquire about their ailments. She just launched into their plan for fasting treatments, saying, quote, "You have no time to lose. We must start treatment today," because their conditions were, quote, quite serious.
Oh, yes, I bet. Which ones? Which conditions? That doesn't matter.
When the sisters asked if she was going to examine them, she said that would come later, after the fast had been in progress for some time.
Oh, God.
The sisters were then led into a treatment room for an osteopathic massage, which consisted of the doctor, quote, hammering her fists against their backs, heads, and foreheads.
Wee.
After their massage treatments, they met the doctor's husband, Sam, who also managed the business and promotional side of the facility. And then Dr. Hazard explained that the fast was simple. They were to boil tomatoes in a quart of water until it had reduced to around a pint, and then they were to drink one cup of that each twice a day. And that was all they were allowed to eat.
Boiled tomato water.
Boiled tomato water. One cup twice a day. Two cups of boiled tomato water every day.
This is not going to end well.
No, it's fucking horrendous. She said that they could add about a thumbnail's size amount of butter, but no salt or sugar. And eventually they would introduce asparagus tips as well. And they could have orange juice in the morning. Eventually. They were also prescribed vigorous walks several times a day and were scheduled to meet at her office every weekday for enemas and more hammering massages.
Oh my God. So enemas, tomato water, walks.
Punch massages, multiple walks a day, every single day of the week.
Wow.
Yeah. Dr. Hazard took the weekends off from slowly killing her patients.
Right.
And so the sisters started their treatment, and every day they would check in with each other to see if that was the day it would kick in and they would finally be well. At first, they were weak and tired, but felt euphoric, knowing they were so close to being cured. About a week into the treatment, they both started fainting on a regular basis. And when one would hear the other one hit the deck, they were usually too exhausted to check on them.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Their daily enemas required them to get into the bathtub and double up into the, quote, knee-chest position. And at first, the enemas lasted around a half an hour, but got longer as time went on.
No.
Stretching into an hour and then two and then multiple hours.
You are kidding me.
No. When they started fainting during them, a canvas hammock was stretched across the tub to catch them. But Dr. Hazard reassured them they were necessary to get rid of the poisons. The weeks stretched into months, and the sister's neighbor in the apartment complex said that she started hearing them wailing and moaning in agony through the wall that separated them. And the other residents of the complex said that their rapid weight loss was shocking.
I cannot imagine.
No. And the thing that is almost as bad for me about this case is that so many people watch this happen. Quote, deep dark lines etched the area around their mouths, and their roomy eyes, R-H-E-U-M-Y, roomy eyes were hollow and underscored with a dark smudge of skin. Their hands were bony, knuckles raising the skin up like rows of four tiny tent poles. Dr. Hazard gave the sisters the information for a nurse named Nellie Sherman, who could give them extra care when they weren't with her, and the neighbor would watch the woman struggle to make it to the sun porch that was just down the hall with her assistance. Eventually, Claire got so weak she could barely even make it with assistance and had to hold herself up against the wall to get anywhere. A neighbor named Clara Corrigan moved in a few weeks after the sisters, and she visited them one day after their nurse had encouraged her to stop by and meet them. She arrived in the middle of their massage treatments and said she was horrified by their appearance. She said that she overheard Dr. Hazard telling the nurse that a patient had died at the facility in Olalla, and so she had performed an autopsy. The doctor said she'd been frustrated because she didn't have, quote, a large enough vessel for the patient's remains. And Miss Corrigan took that to mean that she dismembered the patient after or during the autopsy. She said that she watched as the doctor told Dora to stick out her tongue and then said, quote, your tongue is not clean. You are not clean. You are not fit to take food yet. Your tongue will have to be clean and your breath will be sweet. You know what makes a breath sweet?
Food, water, and food.
Yes. You know what makes it not sweet?
Starvation.
Rotting from the inside because your body is consuming itself. It's just amazing, too, that the doctor was just had convinced everybody because it's hiding in plain sight, right? Just to be that confident and just act like this is just, I am a doctor. This is what I am trained to do. This is what I have been given the authority to do.
Right.
And how would anyone know any different, you know?
Sure.
They can't look it up.
No, there's no Google.
No. They had other issues in the 1910s. They weren't like, oh, man, got to get that microfiche system up and running. Clara Corrigan returned to their apartment to help the sisters in any way she could, but could not convince them to eat or stray from the doctor's orders. When Claire had been fasting for 30 days and Dora for over 40, I don't know what the discrepancy was. I don't know why they had a 10-day discrepancy, but at that point, Nurse Sherman started confiding in Clara that she was concerned about their treatments and was concerned that they were so weak they might die.
Yeah.
You can't not eat for 30 and 40 days, guys.
No.
When they finally became delirious, the doctor told them that it had been their brains causing their troubles all along and not their bodies. And that was why previous doctors hadn't been able to diagnose them properly. She also suggested that they should store their valuables in the safe that she had in her office.
That's convenient.
And it took 3 attempts to convince them that it was a good idea, but eventually they relented. Finally, Nellie Sherman got so concerned, she went to another doctor to get a second opinion, and he was like, feed them, you crazy fuck.
Seriously. But not too quickly at this point, because that will also kill them.
Yeah. And also clarified that Dr. Linda Hazard didn't have a fasting license, because it didn't exist.
Oh, I laugh. It is not fucking funny.
No, it's horrible. I do think she did have a medical license. I do think she was an osteopath because she ended up getting her license revoked. But
Yeah.
By April, they were so weak, they had to be carried everywhere. But that wasn't that hard because they were so thin. They both weighed around 70 pounds. On April 21st, it was finally time to transport them to Olalla, and 2 ambulances were scheduled to transport them. All of their neighbors watched as they were packed into the ambulances and, quote, Dora's face was completely covered with a white dressing of cotton bandages, and it appeared her hands were bound in the manner of an Egyptian mummy.
Wow.
As they waited in the ambulances, Dr. Hazard's lawyer arrived to sign an amendment to Claire's will that said that she wanted to leave £25 per year, which was around $2,500, to the Hazard Institute of Natural Therapeutics, and that her remains should be handled and cremated by Linda Hazard in the event of her death. They were then brought to the ferry that would then bring them to Olalla, where they were taken by horse and buggy to the home, and once they were finally at the facility, they were carried inside on stretchers. As they were carried in, Claire reached for her sister's hand and said, quote, the country, we are here, oh, Dory.
Dora was too weak and delirious to answer, and so Claire said, "It'll be all right. We will be well soon."
Mm. Poor sisters.
It's so sad. It's so fucking terrible. It's so terrible. And they just, you know, just tortured for months. Well, a whole entire apartment complex watched, and outside nurses and other doctors, and so many people were aware of what was happening. And they, like, the whole crowd of the apartment complex crowded around to watch them get packed into these weird ambulances.
Yeah, it's like a sideshow at that point.
Yeah. And they said, they were like, well, we were relieved in a way. We didn't want to look at them anymore.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So hard to watch them. And they were also like, no, we want to do this. You know, that's the other fucked up thing. It was just like kidnapped Stockholm syndrome in plain sight, right? Because they were adult women. They could have, they were in their 30s. They had tons of money. They could have done anything they wanted. And the neighbors were like, come on, let's go get, let's get a second opinion. Let's eat some bread. And they were like, nope, mm-hmm. this is what we want to do. And what are you going to do? You know,
right.
Call CPS. I don't think it existed then because they had other fish to fry in the 1910s. They didn't have, like, children were still working the mines. I'm sure they weren't concerned about adult, filthy rich adult women
being victimized and tortured to death.
Yeah. Right. They were put in an unfinished attic area where Claire had a tiny room and Dora stayed on the landing away from her sister. Linda Hazard's 22-year-old son, Roland, also lived in the home and helped keep an eye on them and turned Claire down when she started begging for food, telling her, quote, "If you eat now, you'll die. If you wait, you'll be in perfect health."
No.
On April 30th, the sister's childhood nursemaid, Margaret Conway, received a cablegram with an update on Dora's plans to spend some time in Australia with her while Claire studied teaching back in England. So originally the sisters were like, we're going to go to Canada. We're going to see all of our distant relatives. And then Dora's going to go to Australia while Claire studies teaching. Mm-hmm. Claire didn't need a job, obviously. They were filthy rich, but she wanted to become a teacher. And Dora, they were so close. Dora's like, well, Margaret's family was in Australia, but she had raised the girls, which I'll get into a little bit more. And so Dora's like, well, I'll go be with Margaret to keep me company while you do that, because I know you'll be distracted. And so that had been the plan. And Margaret had gone to Australia to see her sisters in the meantime and was really hoping that Dora and Claire would end up in Australia because she didn't want to leave. But she was like, I'll go wherever they go, essentially. But phase one of the plan was for Dora to go to Australia and Claire to go back to England.
Got it.
This week's episode is sponsored by Care Of.
Care Of is a health and wellness company that ships high-quality, personalized vitamins, supplements, and powders conveniently to your door every month.
All you do to get started is take a short, simple online quiz about your lifestyle and health goals, and Care Of will give you doctor-backed recommendations. It is that easy. You all know how much I believe in gut health, having a wife who had serious gut health issues and being somebody who has always struggled with my gut health. I am a big old stan of their probiotic plus gut health supplement. It helps you go on the regular. It helps reduce gas and bloating. It helps the occasional upset stomach, helps my digestion. I can't get enough of it. Pair that with the flaxseed and chia. I'm good to go, you guys. My life is regular, shall we say.
If you know what I mean.
Wink.
I've been enjoying the multivitamin for women. It contains iron, which we all need. It also is easy to digest, so I'm not having any weird burps later on, which I really appreciate.
Oh, God. Thank you, modern science, for reducing all of those gross things that we had to deal with in the 90s. So you, too, can experience the benefits of Care Of, and for 50% off your first Care Of subscription, 50% off, go to takecareof.com and enter code THEYWILL50.
That's 50% off your first Care Of subscription order. Go to takecareof.com and enter code THEYWILL50.
Do it. You deserve it. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
Hey, guess what time of the year it is where I live?
Allergy time.
It is the time of the year when everything is coated with a literal inch of green dust that has been rained down from the mighty, mighty oak trees surrounding us. And guess what that does to my face and head and sinuses and eyes and nose and mouth?
Congests you.
Destroys them. Yes, I am in congestion nightmare town. And thank God for Claritin showing up when they did to give me some relief from the literal inch and a half. The measurement's going to continue to grow as we get through this episode of green dust that is that shows up to terrorize my community every year.
Yeah, not to mention everybody mowing their grass at all times.
Right, that. Spores.
That one gets me.
Pollens. Other allergens that I can't name because I am not an allergy scientist. But they are here and they are out in force and they are hitting my face with a vengeance.
Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better.
This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing and runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
I mean, what else could you ask for?
Nothing, honestly. So are you ready to live as if you don't have allergies? It is time to live Claritin Clear.
Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription.
Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear.
Make sure to use as directed. So Margaret had been with the family since Dora was one and had been their stand-in mother after both of their parents and sisters had died. And so they were extremely close. The cablegram said, quote, come SS Marama, May 8th, first class, Claire. So Margaret thought it was very strange that Claire would have mentioned the first class status in the message. Because she'd been born into wealth and hadn't ever flaunted it, so wouldn't have mentioned it to someone who had known her entire life.
And it would also be just assumed.
Right. Exactly.
There would be no reason to mention it because, of course, she would travel first class.
Exactly right. Yeah. So she was like, duh. First of all, yes, obviously. Why would she not have traveled first class? And two, weird. But yeah. Such a smarty, smarty pants to be like, wait a minute. Of the words of this cablegram, she was like, that's not, something's off immediately.
Wow. Good for her.
So Margaret called the steamship company and learned that the SS Marama was scheduled to leave Sydney on May 8th and not come into Sydney that day. And so knew something was seriously wrong and booked a ticket for herself to leave on that boat that day.
Wow.
Yes. And she's like, I will take one first class ticket. They're like, we don't have any. She's like, second class. She's like, we don't have any. She's like, I'm getting on that fucking boat. If I don't care what I have to do. Basically begged her way on the boat because it was already all booked up. I know. Amazing. So she arrived in Vancouver on June 1st and Sam Hazard picked her up at the port. So she had been writing. She'd like stopped in Hawaii and obviously Linda or Sam had been writing cablegrams back and forth. So she sent a message and said, hey, Claire, I'm coming. You stay there. I'll come. I'm coming to you. And so one of the Hazards started corresponding with her. And so on the stops along the way, she was getting information from them pretending to be either Dora or Claire. So on the trip to Washington, so she got dropped off in Vancouver. Sam picks her up and they start heading to Washington. And he tells her, quote, Miss Claire has died and Miss Dora is helplessly insane. FYI.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. She said, and then he went back to doing the work he was doing. And then he just handed her a handkerchief because she started sobbing. She's broke down because one of her children was dead. Yes. And he was like, went back to his paperwork. Once they reached Seattle, Linda Hazard informed her that Claire had died due to some medication she'd been given during her childhood, quote, which had shrunk her internal organs and caused cirrhosis of the liver.
You're fucking kidding me.
Nope. When Margaret got to Olalla, Dora was down to 50 pounds, 50 pounds, and had signed over her entire estate to Linda, as well as given her power of attorney. Quote, meanwhile, the Hazards had helped themselves to Claire's clothes, household goods, and an estimated $6,000 worth of the sisters' diamonds, sapphires, and other jewels. Dr. Hazard even delivered a report to Margaret concerning Dora's mental state while dressed in one of Claire's robes.
You are kidding me.
No.
God.
Horror show. Fucking.
I do what I want.
Horror show.
Insane. Yeah.
I can't, especially back then where you just live in this one life and you think your children are somewhat insulated from crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They have access to anything in the whole entire world and they end up at this fucking weird house in the middle of the woods in Washington where they're like sleeping in an unfinished attic. And she shows up wearing one of your robes and shit. Just, God. The other sister's an actual skeleton. Margaret insisted that Dora needed to leave their home and seek proper medical attention before she died. But of course, the Hazards refused. She then reached out to the sister's uncle, John Herbert, who thank God, very conveniently lived in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, good.
And he offered the Hazards $1,000 to let Dora leave, and they finally agreed.
For money, of course.
Of course.
That's smart. He's like, okay, I get what you're playing at here.
Yeah, let me speak your language. Here's $1,000, which I'm sure at the time was the equivalent of like $50,000.
Right.
Thank God he was so close. So Linda Hazard was arrested on August 15th, 1911, and was charged with first-degree murder for the starvation death of Claire Williamson. She went to trial in January, and the sisters' neighbors and nurses testified about what they'd seen while they had lived in Seattle and got weaker over the weeks they were there. Dora was also well enough to testify at trial.
Wow.
The whole time I was reading this book, I was like, is this kind of fictionalized? Like, how does he have all this information? No, it's because Dora was there. She was alive. Yeah,
she got her brain back after she ate some carbs.
The prosecution also outlined what they called the, quote, financial starvation, which were the forged checks, letters, and other schemes the Hazards had used to empty the sisters' bank accounts.
Yeah, I mean, not that it would be okay if this was they thought it was a legitimate treatment, but clearly they had criminal intent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah they weren't. Well, they weren't kind of. I think it's a little mix of both, but you'll hear why in a moment. Just like Bell, Guinness, and all of them at that time. Mm-hmm. Like, man, a really easy way to get a lot of money is to lure people out to your rural farms and then shoot them, burn them, decapitate them, starve them, poison them, whatever you need to do until they're gone. And then fucking slip of the paperwork. And next thing you know, you're a millionaire.
Right. Yeah.
There were even rumors that the Hazards had a connection with the local mortuary where Claire's body had been taken and that they had switched her remains out with someone healthier. So there wouldn't have been proof that she died of starvation. Linda's defense was that, quote, death in the fast never results from deprivation of food, but is the inevitable consequence of vitality sapped to the last degree by organic imperfection. What a little slippery, little special little twist of the words. So in other words, if you died during a fast, you had something that was going to kill you soon anyway.
Right. No, it's your fault.
To die in the place where you're supposed to be safe, that your chance of living is supposed to be the highest, is fucked up.
Yeah.
She said that the trial was an attack on her success and her unconventional methods that others were threatened by.
Oh, yes. And that is exactly what's happening here.
She was found guilty of manslaughter and sentenced to 2 to 20 years. She served 2 years hard labor, and her medical license was revoked. While she was in prison, she fasted to prove that her claims had value, because of course she did.
Of course.
For some reason, and the author didn't know why, the governor of Washington pardoned her a year after her release.
Weird.
I'm assuming it's just because she was a very powerful person. I'm assuming it's because she was well-connected and well-respected. And even like the neighbor who heard the girls moaning through the walls, she was like, I had a friend who had gone to seek treatment with her and had died.
Wow.
Like fairly recently, within a year of the sisters getting the treatment. But she was like, but everybody knew Dr. Hazard and everybody was afraid of her and also respected her.
Yeah.
And the author was like, she almost sort of hypnotized people, it seems. Like she was so powerful and so convincing that he was like, it felt like she even hypnotized people into just killing themselves because she was so good at this.
Yeah. It's cult shit. It's 100%.
Yes.
Yeah.
Preying on wealthy people who are searching for meaning, who have no family members, so are already kind of searching for something and searching for comfort and care. And she would sort of go between, of course, because it's cult shit, but go between just like being incredibly loving and caring and protective to tearing them down and belittling them and,
controlling
cult
them
shit. Yeah. So after her release, she moved to New Zealand to be close to people who supported her practice.
I bet she did.
She then moved back to Olalla in 1920 and actually built a sanatorium, which she called the School for Health, because she didn't get her license reinstated, her medical license, so she couldn't say anything about medicine. So the School for Health. It doesn't seem that anyone died at the new institute, as far as I could tell, but I wouldn't put money on the fact that nobody did. So that institute burnt down in 1935. So between 1908 and 1912, between 12 and 17 people died while under her care, including a woman who Linda claimed shot herself. But experts suspect there are likely more. Also, the home and the land that she had the sisters stay in was from one of her patients, got signed over by one of her patients.
Of course it was. She's like, nope, it's not ready yet. Nope, it's not ready yet. Just waiting for the person to die.
Why don't we put you up an apartment that you pay for and I'll just treat you from this apartment until it's quote unquote ready. And then eventually, so the neighbors aren't hip to the fact that you actually die when you're so weak that you don't even care anymore. We're going to move you into my unfinished attic. Mm-hmm. She also kept the sisters separated. And at one point, one of them crawled to the other one. For comfort. And then one was like, you got to go back. Yeah, get out of here. You have to. Yeah, it's so sad.
That's so sad.
I left a fair amount out because it's fucking just actual torture. It's an actual nightmarish horror movie.
Yeah.
And it's so, I don't know. It's weird that as a horror writer and someone who's covered true crime for so long, like there's just some things that are so sad and disturbing that I'm like, I don't know, but.
You can fill the blanks in.
Yeah.
You don't need to torture the people.
No. Yeah. So in 1936, Linda got very sick and so started fasting to cure herself, but it didn't work.
Oh.
And she died of starvation.
Good. God.
And that, my darlings.
Holy shit. How old was she when she died?
In her 70s.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Or maybe... She was old. She lived a full life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she was, that was 36. She was 43 when the sisters got there. So yeah, she was in her 70s or early 80s. And she died of her own starvation. What the fuck?
Well, she should have been better. Her body should have been better to handle the starvation.
Yeah. If you're going to torture and starve 12 to however many people to death, the very least you can do is put yourself through that at the end to stick by your convictions. It's like, if that's really who you are and how you feel, I got to tip my hat just slightly to Linda Hazard for just being like, all right, this is how I'm going to go out too.
for believing in it enough mm-hmm. to do it to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. But what the fuck, you guys? Mm-mm. God. Mm-mm. Is that just about the worst thing you've ever heard in your entire life?
Yes, I would say it is. One of the top 10 for sure. I don't like being hungry. Nobody likes to be hungry. Mm-mm. It's to do that to yourself, to have it done to you mm-mm. until you die is mm-hmm. not okay.
No. And there's hundreds of people within earshot. There's people checking in on you every single day. There's a licensed nurse coming to see you every single day mm-hmm. that could have intervened, could have called the police, could have sneaked some fucking carbs into your tomato juice, anything. But no, you just just happens and keeps happening for days and days and days, right in plain sight until you just die. It's fucking horrendous.
That's awful. That is awful.
There was also one of her patients who kept a journal of everything he ate every day while he was under her care who died. So the police had ample evidence. Also, the fact that she was convicted of manslaughter. Come on.
Yeah, no. No, but if she was able to convince people that she really believed in the treatment, didn't think it was going to kill anybody.
Right.
Then I guess it would be manslaughter.
True. And the sisters were like, yeah, no, we did this to ourselves. Dora was able to, we were consenting to this treatment. She didn't force it on us. But then at some point, Claire starts begging for food and Roland, and I don't know if he was implicated at all, or Sam, who watched this happen and took her fucking money and her clothes and everything. But at that point, I feel like it's no longer manslaughter. It's now actual murder.
Murder.
If one of them is not no longer consenting, is begging to be let out of this treatment and ended up dying, then I think that it switches over to murder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree.
But it's also the 1910s and they have bigger fish to fry, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow. That was crazy.
It's horrible. It's pretty horrible.
Thanks for nothing.
Sure, I didn't see any movies that had been made. I didn't dig deeply, but I would be so surprised if there weren't movies made about her.
I'm sure. Yeah, the name is definitely, the name is all super familiar for sure. Yeah. But
there definitely came a point at the very end of writing it that I was like, wait, have we covered this story? Which I'm 100% sure I'd never heard this story before.
We've not.
Definitely a story that I would remember. But yeah, there is such a familiarity. I think it's also because there were so many people, and especially women around that time, luring people places and then murdering them in the 10s and 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. But I think, it just started smacking of Bell Guinness so much that mm-hmm. I was like, wait a second. And speaking of which, I don't know if I've even mentioned that I live basically where Bell Guinness lived, where her farm was.
Yeah, I don't think you have.
Yeah. When I heard that story for the first time, I had moved here and they were like, LaPorte, Indiana. And I was like, hold the fucking phone. Wait, what? Especially because she was Dutch and, they like this whole buildup to the story. And they're like, and her farm in LaPorte, Indiana. And I'm like, of all places for a Dutch woman to land and then start a murder farm.
I assume her farm is no longer in existence.
No, but apparently LaPorte, I mean, you mentioned that you do true crime in my town. People are like, have you covered Belgium? I'm like, no, because literally everybody every podcast has. Yeah, she's very famous. Don't worry. But they do like a whole Bell Guinness festival at Halloween and stuff, apparently, which I've never participated in, which is really weird that I haven't. But I don't think her farm exists anymore.
It's one of those, like, we don't need to glorify serial killers, you know?
No, I'm not a big fan of serial killers, if that's not abundantly clear.
Yeah. Well, good one, Eck.
Thank you very much. And good one, the internet, and good one, Greg Olson, for writing this horrible book. And I didn't even finish it all. I know he goes into more depth with the other victims, but this is obviously the most famous case because one of them lived and it was the one that got her convicted, even though her conviction was pretty weak.
Yeah. Well, where do we go from here?
Well, I think we owe the people some name time. Sadie is still in the throes of the waiting to find out what is wrong with her and managing her pain in the meantime. So we're not at 100% yet, but I think we can give the people some name time. Yeah,
totally. Yeah, absolutely. And before we do that, if anybody has experience with MRIs, like tips, no, I don't want any horror stories, but I hear differing experiences. So if you've had an MRI, what helped you? I don't think I'm claustrophobic, but I've never been in a situation. So
yeah,
just curious. That's what's coming next. Scheduled for a few weeks out, but hopefully there will be cancellations and I can get in sooner.
Yeah.
But my pain is better. I'm feeling better. I'm taking it easy. And I look forward to kicking whatever is in my body out.
Yeah. Get out of there, guy. Our best friend recommended... or didn't recommend, suggested that it might be a parasitic twin, which I hadn't even crossed my mind. Which best I can't believe scenario. It hadn't crossed my mind. I hope it's not, because it's a very invasive surgery to have a parasitic twin removed. But also, I would be pretty impressed by you if you had absorbed your twin.
Seriously. And just now realized it.
Well, that's what
if
happens.
If it doesn't have teeth and hair, I'm going to be sad.
I don't think they attach to your uterus. I think it's more of an abdominal thing, but maybe it just on the ultrasound, it looks like it's on your uterus, but it's actually in wherever parasitic twins end up. And so.
Yeah. The doctors were pretty certain that they're not real sure where it is exactly. Like it's in my abdomen pelvis area, but it's, they don't think it's inside the uterus. They think it's outside of the uterus. It's near there.
Oh my God. So
it's getting blood flow from somewhere.
Could be a parasitic twin.
It could be. Fingers crossed.
Oh my God. Everyone, we got to think of names. If it is.
Yeah. I mean, regardless, we can name it whatever it is.
Fish Williamson. Well, we've already got a DeColdest. DeColdest already has a namesake, so it can't be DeColdest Crawford, but it could be Happy Thanksgiving Reynolds, MD.
Oh my God. Maybe that'll be my doctor. Happy Thanksgiving,
Reynolds. Reynolds. Come on. If Happy Thanksgiving isn't best friends with Dr. Marijuana Pepsi, I don't even know. I don't even know. How about Lilana Bramble? Come on.
Come on. Beautiful.
Like, you meet somebody. What's your name, Lilana? And, oh, what's your last name? Bramble? Get the fuck out of here. What are you, a song?
Bramble. Oh, you're a fairy tale character.
Yeah, exactly. Are you a sonnet? I guess. Morley Swingle. God.
Morley Swingle.
Yes. How about Lil Johnson? Douglas George Washington. It's like they started to name him one president and then just took a hard right into another president halfway. Right?
Right.
Douglas, George Washington. Oh my God. Flare up, Farrah Plopper. Poppycorn. That could be the name of your parasitic pun.
Poppycorn. Poppycorn. 100%. That's so cute.
And last but not least, Anita Pillow.
I'm one of those people that sleep with seven pillows. I would sleep with endless pillows if I could.
Oh my God.
I always need a pillow.
I need multiple pillows. I sleep in a pillow fort. My tiny wife and my tiny self sleep in a king size bed that doesn't fit in our room. Our room is not designed to fit a king size bed. It's designed to fit a cot because it's a cabin, a vacation cabin. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
It's designed for like a turn of century, like first aid cot, you know?
Right.
And we have a king size bed jammed in there from wall to wall so that we can both have full pillow forts because we both Anita pillows. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Well, everyone, we love you. And
yes.
We will return with shouty outies once Sadie can sit upright for more than 48 minutes and 44 seconds, which is what we're at right now. I promise. And in the meantime, if you want to get in line for a shouty outie and you want more of this, what we served up to you today, You can go to our Patreon, and for as little as $5 a month, you can get a whole ass other catalog of almost 200 episodes. You can also join in. We're going to have a Patreon party soon. I'm going to be gone next week, but once I'm back, we're going to figure out dates for that. So you still have time to go over there and sign up for as little as $5 a month, and then you'll get a shouty outy once Sadie can sit upright for more than 49 minutes and 21 seconds, which is the count right now.
Pre-edited count.
Yes. And in the meantime, you can also spend more time with us at TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at They Will Kill. You can go to our website, theywillkill.com, and you can email us at theywillkillpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, please tell your friends about us, rate, review, and subscribe to us.
Yes, it really helps.
Thank you, AJ Bergans, for your music.
Thank you so much.
And remember.
So I was thinking about, I've been rewatching movies since Laura's been gone, and I've watched a lot. I've covered a lot of ground. Welcome to the Dollhouse. Oh my God. Speaking of which, so I put Welcome to the Dollhouse into Alexa. I spoke it into my Alexa, and it was like midnight on Saturday night, and I'm home alone in my cabin in the woods with my pugs who are not dog
or protectors.
Not dogs. They're just not dogs, period. Yeah.
They're furry, mostly fluffy potatoes,
furry potato lumpages. And they're poppycorns. And
they really are.
So I spoke Welcome to the Dollhouse into Alexa, and it waited multiple beats to the point that I thought it had not heard it, because Alexa is not super good at her job. And then whispered, psst, thanks so much for having me. Fuck you, Alexa. What?
Not okay.
It was so strange. And I tried to get her to do it again so I could record it, so I could prove to the world that Alexa had just scared the shit out of me. But I could get, if I said welcome, she would just say, thanks for having me. But I swear to God, you guys, she went, psst, thanks so much for having me. Why? Gross. Why?
No, that's not okay.
No.
You know, there's a programmer out there just.
Oh, like, yeah.
Ooh, I'm going to do this to fuck with you. If you say these words at midnight, at the stroke of midnight, I'm going to fuck with you.
It's programmed in. Wait 5 seconds, then whisper. Psst.
Psst.
Thanks so much for having me.
The creepiest part.
Yes. So I was like, whoa, what? I mean, really?
You already have my attention. You don't need to psst me.
Weird. So weird. Oh, God. Welcome to the Dollhouse still is quite a good movie, though. But then don't watch Todd Solondz interviews. That guy is a weirdo.
Okay.
I mean,
do watch Baby Reindeer. If you haven't already, go. It's so good.
I am waiting for Laura to get home, and I don't know why I'm doing that, because she doesn't do it in return. Not that makes her a bad wife, but she just does. She'll watch whatever because she should, because she's an adult. But
right.
I know we'll like it together, so I'm saving it for her to get home when she gets home on Wednesday, so we're close. But, so my original and remember was not that Alexa scared the shit out of me, but that reminded me of it. Young people, young listeners, and I'm talking like Gen Z probably, I think is good. Young millennials and Gen Z. Do things from the 90s look like things from the 20s to you? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like when we were growing up, things from the 50s looked ancient, right?
Right.
Things from the 20s looked like Mozart's time, you know? Like, do things from the 90s look like Mozart's time to you? Do you know what I'm saying? Is it like a steam engine? Is it so old looking to you?
I would assume like 80s, maybe 70s for sure.
Well,
where's the cutoff?
I think that the 80s, like I watched part of Footloose last night, and I think the 80s always looked dated. I think even in the 80s, the 80s looked dated. But do they look like steam engine dated? Does it look like Dust Bowl phonogram or whatever? Like that. Do you know what I'm saying?
It could be. You know, my kiddos, well, you were there. We watched Beetlejuice with my 6-year-old for the first time. He absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
He also doesn't have enough reference points
as
a young child to know what is old, but it seemed super relevant. He loved it.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking like,
still.
We loved like Blues Brothers and stuff, but mm-hmm. Pollyanna felt really old. You know, it was like a thin mm-hmm. line, I think, between like the 50s and 60s. So maybe that's what it is. It's like Petticoat Junction felt old, but Hee Haw felt slightly less old. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like maybe Hee Haw was modern. Was it modern?
I think it.
Leave It to Beaver felt old. But Brady Bunch felt less old. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So how does it feel? Do you feel like you're watching Mozart's era of stuff?
Right. Does Full House feel old, but yes. Friends feels more relevant?
Or does all of it feel like steam engine stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to ask the question because they don't have that perspective that we,
right.
You know? But
well, have you seen the TikToks about talking about what are old names now, like Brittany and Ashley? And
oh,
Amber
my
and,
God. Oh, no. I didn't even think dude. About that.
Yeah.
So Brittany and Ashley are like Pearl and Gertrude.
Exactly.
Oh, mm-hmm. No.
Yep. They're old fashioned.
Oh, yeah. My God. No.
I know. Isn't that wild? Of course I hadn't thought of it because I'm in that generation.
Oh, my God. Age is Courtney so weird,
you guys. Courtney is definitely an old name.
You oh, my is. God.
Sadie was always old, so
yeah,
whatever.
Oh, but, yeah. No. Help.
Help. Yeah, Jordan. But don't worry, because Mackenzie and Madison.
Jade and Kate and those, Peyton.
They will have their time.
Satan.
Yep. They will have their
name
time.
My child
Satan.
Satan. Satan. H. No, not Satan. Satan.
Satan. Come on.
Like the woman who... Was it Clit? What was it? The Southern woman who saw the baby yeah. bag and it embroidered the little baby girl's name on it. What was it?
Yes.
Cunty or something?
Cuntly.
Cuntly. Yeah. Cuntly.
I don't know.
Oh, no.
Clitly. I don't know.
Here's my baby Clitly and Shaitan. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Brokeback Mountain, on the other hand, fucking better than I remembered it by 1,000%. Spectacular movie.
I went down a rabbit hole of zombie. I love zombie movies, but I watched an Alien. I watched World War Z and I... No, wait, I'm getting them mixed up.
Yeah.
Yeah, World War Z mm-hmm. and War of the Worlds. And I loved them both. They're not, like, excellent movies, but...
I would watch either of them. If they came on, I wouldn't turn them off, for sure.
Do you remember? I didn't remember, but I forgot it was directed War of the Worlds was directed by Steven Spielberg, which I did not remember.
Yeah, I didn't think I did either, but it makes sense.
And it's very much Spielberg, for sure. Do you remember the ending? Spoiler, everyone who hasn't watched it.
Water?
Is it no, water? Yeah, it's when they get like a virus and all the aliens die. But the whole time... Tom Cruise is trying to get his children back to his ex-wife who's in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole East Coast has been just completely destroyed,
mm-hmm.
except for they managed to get back. He loses his son at some point. We assume he's dead, mm-hmm. the older teenage son. He has his daughter who does nothing but scream the whole movie. But they get back to Boston. The brown houses, the brownstones
mm-hmm.
that the family lives in, are completely fine. The road is open. Everything is fine. The lights are on. The very pregnant wife opens, the ex-wife opens the door, dressed, showered. Everything is fine. The new husband is fine. Her parents are fine. They're all like in cardigans and sweaters. The porch is swept. The aliens have just died. But everything's fine in this one row of brownstone homes in Boston. And I was like, really?
I mean,
you couldn't have killed somebody off. You couldn't have like just they what? Really? Okay. That's not. One of them has pearls on.
It's not just in the defense of Steven Spielberg. Remember in COVID when they're like, okay, we got to take 3 weeks off of the world. And then they were like, everyone was like immediately getting pedicures 3 weeks later. You know, yeah. And like there were those of us who were like, guys, I think we're in mourning and I think this is still extremely dangerous. And then there were people who were like showered pearls at the pedicure station immediately. Yeah. Like they had sacrificed so much for 3 weeks of their life to not get a fucking pedicure and not go to TGI Fridays. So. Yeah. Yeah, to suspend your disbelief that the entire family was left intact and that the electricity grid is still somehow functioning and they have like safe water to shower and the pearls and stuff. And their main priority right now is to sweep their porch versus like get digging people out of the rubble. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
But no, also not, at the same
their windows
time,
are imported. Like no looters coming to their house with electricity.
Some sort of like rogue, half alive alien sneaking in there and getting them at the last second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're all watching at the windows because as soon as Tom Cruise shows up in the road, they're like, oh my God, it's Tom.
Oh, thank God. We are
kid.
Put on our Sunday best to greet them home.
Anyway, I just didn't remember that ending at all.
No, I didn't remember like, that.
Something. That is something to behold.
All. That movie scared me, though. That sound of that alien scared
me. Oh, God. No, the images are... There's a part where there's, like, clothes raining down on them in the woods. It's really... I mean, the images of the aliens, of some of the shit that happens is really scary and good. It's a good... That part of the movie is good. The end...
There was moment I was in Western Massachusetts with my best friend and we were going out on a hike and there was this weird kind of clearing in the woods kind of off in the distance. At the same time, we were both looking at this in that direction at the same time and a big white propeller comes cresting the fucking horizon line. And we both had the immediate first reaction, same reaction, like, oh my God, aliens, like immediate. And it was a windmill that was weirdly positioned so that it you couldn't see the windmill. You could just see the fucking blade and it came up over. It was awful. And it was awful.
That's so scary.
And we just looked at each other like, okay, wow. Okay. We're dead.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was terrifying. And that's exactly what I thought of. And that sound. I actually researched that sound when I was making Dark Mommy, my short film, because I was looking for Dark Mommy sound. And that sound had such an impression on me as just the scariest shit I'd ever heard. And it was still so, so fucking scary.
Yes. It's really good. Really scary sound. Anywho.
All right, in conclusion. We love you.
What is old?
Brokeback Mountain. Excellent. War of the Worlds, mediocre, worth watching. And also, does this shit look super, super old to you? Or does it look medium old or not old at all?
Right. What should I name my possible parasitic twin?
Poppycorn.
I think Poppycorn is way too cute to name the mass inside of my abdomen.
No, it's Sadie, it's your twin. It's your sister.
our sister, Courtney, ours.
Well, true. But you're the murderer of our sister, so... I get to name her. That's the way this works. You murder my sister, I get to name the dead sister, the absorbed sister.
Okay, deal.
Oh my God. What if it is? Wow. What if it is? Do we have a fucking funeral? Like, what do we do?
We hope it comes to life when it's born and have a little parasitic twin.
Sadie, I think you need to read up on parasitic twins a little bit more.
No, I'm fully picturing like
Sadie's
fleshy blob.
Reanimate it. Basket case it. Brule. What was Basket Case's name? Brule. Anyway. We love you all. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your love. And we will see you real soon. And we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.